we passed the budget. Or not, we didn't pass it. It's on the desk. 11:48 or something like that. So you guys can go home early this weekend.
How much could it possibly cost a construction project to have a few mandated shade breaks throughout the day?
Do what we believe is best for Florida State, not only in the short term, but in the long term.
From the fourth floor of the Capitol Rotunda, you're listening to WFSU Public Media's Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan. Among today's Capitol action, Florida's annual legislative session is set to end on time this Friday. The legislature has released the final details of its $117.5 billion spending plan. Lynn Hatter tells us how the state plans to spend its money.
The budget includes more than $700 million for Senate President Kathleen Passidomo's proposal to expand access to health care by increasing the number of providers. What it does not include, any expansion of the state's Medicaid program for low-income Floridians. That's been off the table by Republicans for years.
We don't have enough health care personnel to deliver health care to the Floridians that are living here in our state now. Expanding Medicaid does nothing. Whether you have insurance or you don't have insurance, we just don't have enough.
The state spending proposal also includes 3% pay raises for state employees and some private corrections officers, and a last-minute ask by Governor Ron DeSantis to provide $450 million in toll road relief. House Budget Chair Tom Leake calls it taxpayer protection.
Well, it is a big ask, and it's to drive that directly to the consumer. And toll relief. And so, it was warranted. The question is where it was going to come from, and I think that all gets resolved in the tax package.
Also being funded, more pay raises for teachers, though that money will have to be negotiated between local teachers' unions and their school districts. The state is also upping the money for its universal school voucher program. Passidomo told reporters she's satisfied with the legislature's work.
I feel, I just feel good about, this whole session. So I'm not worried about anything at this point. We passed the budget. Or not, we didn't pass it. It's on the desk. 11:48 or something like that. So you guys can go home early this weekend. Twice in 2 years.
The spending proposal is coming in at $3 billion more than what Governor Ron DeSantis proposed and just about 2% less than the spending for the current fiscal year. I'm Len Hatter.
A bill that could invalidate local heat ordinances has passed the Florida Senate. Tristan Wood reports senators were not in line with the House-approved version, which had more sweeping local preemption.
The House approved a proposal that would have banned municipalities from making any type of labor regulation impacting government contractors, including passing heat and living wage ordinances. But the Senate replaced that proposal with its own, which just bans heat ordinances. Panama City Republican Senator Jay Trumbull argues his bill is justified because piecemeal regulations across the state increase costs for businesses. Plus, he says the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, already exists to protect workers.
As a business owner, when you hear the words OSHA, that's not a good thing to hear. It usually means that you've done something wrong. And they are not usually kind in their fines. It's usually pretty expensive.
Boca Raton Democratic Senator Tina Polsky says she doesn't see how increased heat protection in hotter climates like South Florida would be cost prohibitive for businesses. Miami-Dade County has a heat ordinance already on the books.
How do we know that every company is doing the right thing here? How much could it possibly cost a construction project to have a few mandated shade breaks throughout the day? It's not going to stop the project from being completed.
Kissimmee Democratic Senator Victor Torres pushed back on the idea OSHA oversight is enough.
Does OSHA have the manpower to go out there and inspect, to go out there to these work sites, to these agriculture or construction sites and see are their workers well protected, drinking water and shade? I don't think so.
Trumbull disagreed with the argument that OSHA is inadequate.
Yes, so much so that if you do a quick Google search, you'll see that in the last couple of years, there's been multiple fines to agriculture businesses specifically for not providing adequate things for their employees.
A According to its website, OSHA employs one inspector for every 70,000 workers in America, not accounting for commute, paperwork, or other administrative tasks. That leaves less than 2 minutes for an inspector to focus on each worker per year. The bill now bounces back to the House for its approval. I'm Tristan Wood.
Approval was pending today in the Florida Senate for a bill aimed at preventing homeless people from sleeping in public. Under the bill, local governments would be able to designate certain property for sleeping or camping. Such areas, which could only be used for 1 year, would need access to such things as restrooms and running water, have security, and be deemed alcohol and drug-free. Senate President Kathleen Passidoma said the homelessness issue was breaking her heart.
It's really troublesome when you go to cities that seem to have more and more homeless people, you know, living under bridges, on the street, in front of buildings.
Some Democrats, including State Senator Bobby Powell, have questioned putting people into camps rather than working to get them needed assistance.
We're mandating locations where homeless services or unhoused people should go, and there's no way to really determine where that is.
Residents or business owners would have standing to file civil lawsuits against local governments for allowing illegal sleeping or camping on public property. The legislation wouldn't provide state money to cover the costs of the temporary locations. The House voted to pass the bill last week. The initial court hearings are set for a pair of lawsuits between Florida State University and the Atlantic Coast Conference. As Adrian Andrews reports, the two have been feuding since late December over media deals worth millions of dollars.
Florida State University and the Atlantic Coast Conference have filed lawsuits against each other in their home states. The ACC, which operates out of Charlotte, North Carolina, will have its first court hearing in Leon County in April. The conference is asking a judge to dismiss a lawsuit FSU filed over its media rights deal. In December, the chairman of FSU's Board of Trustees, Peter Collins, took issue with the ACC. He says the conference owes FSU more money for its televised games.
I believe that we have exhausted all possible remedies within the conference, and we must do what we believe is best for Florida State, not only in the short term, but in the long term.
Other programs have cashed in on lucrative media deals, especially schools in the Southeastern and Big Ten Conference. FSU has attempted to leave the conference, but the ACC declined. Commissioner Jim Phillips went on the ACC network later that month to respond to FSU's inquiry. He says the school signed over its media rights years ago, and it would take more than verbal threats to get them back.
We feel very strongly about a document that was signed by one of our members, willingly signed by one of our members back in 13 and in 16, and we're ready to fight. And we will go through this and in a reasonable way, but we will protect the ACC.
Following the commissioner's statements, the ACC filed a motion in mid-February to a Leon County judge, where FSU is located, to ask that the school's lawsuit be dismissed. That hearing will take place April 9th. Meanwhile, in March, a judge in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, is scheduled to take up FSU's motion to dismiss the ACC's filed lawsuit to try to keep the school from leaving the conference. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Gina Jordan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Shows are available Monday through Thursday by 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, wherever you get your podcasts. On many of these Florida public radio stations, you can tune in each Friday to catch the latest on all things happening at the Capitol. That show's also available in podcast form. Technical assistance comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report, the podcast from WFSU Public Media.